All right, before I start, I want to two notes. One, I'm talking a lot about how husbands are responsible for everything in their home, right? So the line that I use, most of this, just so you guys know, if you've thought that anything I've done is super creative, you need to be aware that none of this is original to me. I'm using multiple resources and faithful pastors. I'm pulling from their illustrations and their structures and things like that. But one of the things that I really like saying that's not original to me, that I say a lot to men, is that it might not be your fault, it is your responsibility, because you're the leader of the home. I'm going to say that. What I want to clarify there is that your spouse's sin is your spouse's sin. Okay, you are not going to be held accountable for your spouse's sin. So if you've been sinned against in really grievous ways, you didn't cause that. So I'm not trying to heap guilt on you, husbands, especially as the leader of the home. Like your wife's sin is your wife's sin. I'm not saying that as you are responsible for the home, you're like bearing all of this guilt. I'm not putting that on you, okay? And vice versa. Your spouse's sin is theirs. And so, husbands, you're responsible to disciple and to see sanctification through that process. But I don't want to like heap guilt on that, okay? In addition to that, the other thing that I wanted to just say is like this section is on sex and fidelity. I'm going to try to be pretty blunt, just straightforward, but not like graphic or anything. So in Genesis 2, this verse that we've already read many times, quoted by Jesus, quoted by the Apostle Paul, we see Adam, we see Dirt Boy, the man, right? Dirt Boy said, "At last, this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, Isha, out of man, for she is taken out of man," right? And Dirt Boy becomes Fireman, right? Or Sean doesn't like Fireman. We call him Flame Man. Flame Man. There we go. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. This is very covenantal language. We talked about this in the first session. In the second session, it's covenantal, okay? And it is a covenant that is grounded in companionship. It's grounded in procreation, so expansion, filling the earth with the image of God, and it's grounded in sexual fidelity. This is a central part of the marriage union. It is a part of your covenant. Sex is a part of your covenant. Okay. Throughout early church history and medieval church history, many, many Christians took a very negative view of sex and marriage. There was this like this tiered system of holiness, and people who had to get married and people who got married and had sex, that was a lower tier of Christianity. And even like in the little classical school program, we're currently in medieval history, and we're reading Geoffrey of Monmouth, he's got a book called The Ecclesiastical History of the English People. So he's writing from the perspective of the 10th century, and he's talking about all the monks and the kings, and there'd be people who would get married, and then their wife would be like, "Oh, I want to be chaste," and so they'd go years without having sex, as if that was like an act of holiness. I want to put that away. Sex is good. Sex is a good part of God's design. It is an essential part of the marriage covenant. It is a core aspect of the marriage covenant. So I would encourage you to read the Song of Solomon. What the Song of Solomon is, it is an erotic love poem. That's what it is. It's appropriate because we're invited to learn about the passion of the marriage bed through the veils of imagery and metaphor and illustration. What's very clear is that the husband and wife are to delight in one another in an erotic, physical way. So as we consider this, let's remember our framework that we're using. We're going to remember design. We're going to remember needs. We're going to remember weaknesses. And we're going to remember redemption. Okay? So let's look at this again. Husbands, how are you designed? Loving, life-giving leadership. Okay? So, you are to lead proactively in sexual faithfulness and intimacy. Initiating intimacy, not waiting passively. So when you read the Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verses 3 and following, it says, an apple tree among the trees of the forest. So, this is the woman talking about the man. So is my beloved among the young men. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house. His banner over me is love. He sustains me with raisins, refreshed me with apples, for I am sick with love. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. So this is like the man is the leader here in intimacy. So you must lead your home in intimacy. And you must lead by making your wife feel loved and desired and secure, safe. In Proverbs 5:18 and following, it says, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. This is something that you must lead in. You must lead in loving your wife, desiring your wife. It is your responsibility to make sure that she knows you desire her. So compliment her. Talk to her. Be spontaneous sometimes. But more importantly, be consistent in romantically loving your wife. Most people think that the height of romance is spontaneity, but the reality is it's consistent faithfulness in expressing your contentment in her and your love for her. So when you think about your love bestowing loveliness, is what we talked about last night, right? If you love your wife faithfully, it ought to result in her being more lovely. Do you give her all that she needs for that to become a reality? Do you provide for her in a way that she can care for herself in terms of the food that she eats, the clothes that she wears? Do you give her time to work out? Do you work out with her or encourage her to work out? If she's on a diet, do you sit down in front of her and eat a double quarter pounder with cheese? Do you lead well in media consumption and a sleep schedule? If you got a baby, are you going to give her breaks to nap or sleep or hold the baby for a second? Thanks. Good job, Matt. Are you super tight on the dress and makeup budget? Or do you make sure that she has what she needs if she wants to wear something special for you on date night? Are you providing in those ways? Are you leading in your wife becoming more lovely? Not only that, do you lead with tenderness and patience and pursuit? Okay, pursuit's a very important word. So I grew up hunting, getting a little risky here, mixing like sex and hunting metaphors, but I grew up hunting in the South, and you'd put a stand in a tree and you'd sit there for hours and hope that a deer walks under. That's not how marriage and sex and marriage is like. It's much more like hunting in Maui. In Maui, you find the deer herd, they're way over there, you have to stalk them very quietly, you're like pursuing, okay? Sex is not something you take, it's something you cultivate. Men and women are very different in how they move towards sex, and you need to learn from your wife. You need to learn her. You need to be a student of her, her preferences, her desires, what makes her feel loved, etc. So lead through pursuing. Also lead through sacrifice. We don't need to go into detail here, but you should learn how to physically prefer your wife. How do you serve her? Do you put her needs first? Now, there are many times when it's appropriate, totally appropriate, for her to serve you and to prefer you, but have you prioritized her as her leader? Like, is that the general tone of your romantic life, you prioritizing her needs? Wives, you're designed to honor your husbands. Glad submission out of honor, which means you are to have a general tone of receptivity to your husband's sexuality with respect, trust, glad participation in his contentment of you. So receiving your husband's desire as good, not gross or offensive. Okay? Honor his need for connection through the erotic, not despising that. It's very likely that your husband will have more of a sex drive than you do. And our hyper-feminized society, like, says that that's super offensive. That's weird, right? Well, that's an excellent way to reject your husband and make him feel stupid. That doesn't support him and his consistency and patience towards you at all. It just makes him feel like a creep. So help him by cultivating warmth, openness, and invitation. You should ask yourself, is our home a warm place? Am I a warm person? Am I approachable? There are some days when it's totally appropriate for your husband to be aware that tonight's not the night. It makes sense, especially in certain seasons of life. But if that's how it always is, that's a problem. So, are you sexually receptive to his leadership, or is it obvious that you're ready to stiff arm him all the time? Your receptivity really does bolster security and holiness in marriage. A lack of receptivity on your part does not excuse sin, doesn't excuse your husband's sin, but it explains vulnerability. It's like a soldier outside a walled city versus a soldier inside the walled city. Both of them have the responsibility to fight for the king. One is a lot more at risk. So remember design. Also remember needs. What is it that men need? Respect. What is it women need? Okay, so men need respect. Dirt boy needs to be made into fireman, right? With this one flesh union. And a husband needs to be desired and welcomed. He needs your respect for his physical needs. The proverb we read talks about being content with the wife of your youth, being satisfied with her body. A husband needs satisfaction in your body. Sexual rejection, neglect, or contempt feels like dishonor. It's really shameful. It's not just frustrating, it's shameful. Men have a different and most of the time much more active sex drive than women do. And modern society has trained women to be offended by that. And an offended woman is not a safeguard against sin and is not someone who can make that man content. So if we're going to think about sex along the lines of the Song of Solomon, where sex is described as wine and honey and honeycomb and a feast, there's this like feast imagery. We talk about sex in the Song of Solomon. We have to recognize the nature of feasting. It's lavish. So is it your goal that your husband is full and satisfied by the feast? And this should impact your understanding of frequency and quality of sex. When you think about frequency, when you think about how much you can handle, your husband can probably handle more. We can fully acknowledge the ebb and flow of a woman's month and the external life factors that are going to affect frequency. But you should still want to make sure that there's enough frequency that he can honor the command to be satisfied in his wife. When we think about frequency, we think about quality. To be a responsive lover and to treat him well. If there's something that he wants, it's not weird, go for it. If it's not weird, okay? Now, I'm not saying that you should do something that you're uncomfortable with or that is, like, degrading. And men, most of what's portrayed as sex in movies and especially in pornography is weird and degrading. So if that's what you want, that's a problem. But, ladies, if there's something that he wants and it's not your favorite thing to do, but he really likes it, it's okay to prefer him sometimes. Does he want like a back massage or something like that, right? Does he like you to wear a certain thing? Break it out sometimes. If there's something that he prefers and feels loved by and it's not unethical or weird, you should look for opportunities to serve and honor him in special ways. You should look forward to opportunities to get away and reconnect. Men, what do women need? According to our framework,
love.
So for women, sex is usually downstream from a more full understanding of love. All right, so C.S. Lewis has a book called The Four Loves. I'd encourage you to read it if you get a chance. And he lists affectionate love, friendship love, charity or agape. You guys have probably heard that term, agape love, sacrificial love, and then erotic love. Well, men can pretty quickly get to the erotic, very quickly, even if they haven't had the other three types of love, right? Women usually are very different. Women need affection, presence, gentleness, safety, emotional connection. So in other words, she needs your nourishment and cherishment, which we see described in Ephesians 5. So you should stay off your phone. You should stop scrolling Facebook. You should study your wife. You take initiative to schedule a regular date night. Those are all opportunities for you to nourish and cherish your wife, like with a fuller understanding of love. And usually the erotic love is downstream from that. So when sex is disconnected from nourishing and cherishing, it feels transactional or invasive or needy. Faithful husbands love their wives toward intimacy, which means you're not just dropping in with an erotic love every once in a while, but that you're leading with the fuller use of love, all forms of love. This is especially true when your wife's energy and effort is already being spent on little kids. In times like that, she needs your patience and your care and your self-control. She needs your understanding. She needs your leadership through the increase and decrease in frequency and quality of sex. So as we use that feast imagery earlier, the reality is there's feasting seasons. When we think about our year, there's seasons when I will tell you as your pastor that you should not diet. It's a sin to diet Thanksgiving Day. Don't do it. There are seasons for feasting. But there are seasons where it's not time to feast. Not every sexual experience in marriage can be the equivalent of you having gotten a fancy hotel room somewhere and sent the kids off with grandparents. It's not always going to be like that. There's going to be differences in frequency. There's going to be differences in quality, depending on seasons of life, in the out exterior pressures and the times and seasons, the ebb and flow of life. And that's natural. That's good. But you must be content with your wife. Content as in satisfied and joyful with her body. So there's no looking at other women. There's no thinking of other women. There's no fantasizing or imagining. You must be content with your wife and with her body. She is your treasure. She is your safeguard. So we've remembered design, we've remembered need. Let's remember weakness. Men, what are you tempted towards? Domination, abdication. So remember that you're tempted towards domineering or abdication. So in domination, being demanding and impatient or like imbalanced in the way that you love her, being really critical of the frequency and quality, especially in challenging seasons of life, that's domineering. It's unloving. Men are tempted to withhold affection and companionship and sacrificial love and then expect erotic love. That's unloving. And sex isn't going to be good if you're imbalanced in how you love your wife. There's also abdication. The primary form of abdication is abandoning your wife for other forms of sexual gratification through lust, whether that be in person, whether that be with your eyes out in public or at the beach, or whether that be at the gym, or whether that be on digital abdication. Proverbs 5:20 and following says, "Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with the forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. then you need to guard yourselves. You need to guard, you need to set up a guard. This union that you have, this one flesh union, it is exclusive. It's exclusive. Put away porn, inappropriate shows, movies, social media accounts. If there's some form of sexual immorality, you need to kill it like a snake immediately. Get accountability. Get accountability software. So I have accountability software on all my devices. And so this past week, as I was prepping this one, it's titled Sex and Fidelity. And every time I open it on any device, my wife gets an alert. That like, it's like, oh, questionable activity on Jay's device. If you can't get away from it, get a dumb phone. It's worth it. It is worth it to not have Netflix. You don't need to know what happened in Severance. You don't need to know what's going on in whatever show. You don't need to see that movie. That great. Like, I really like Wes Anderson. I know that no one here likes Wes Anderson, except Nick. We like Wes Anderson. I love Wes Anderson movies. Well, the dude has a terrible habit of putting, like, half-naked women in his show. So I've only seen a couple of Wes Anderson movies. Because I'm not going to go watch A Life Aquatic because there's consistently a scene of a woman who's topless. I don't want to see it. It's not worth it. As much as I like Wes Anderson, it's not worth it. You should feel that way about Netflix, Facebook, Instagram. Like, the ability to navigate, the ability to, like, tap pay. Like, this, it's just not worth it if this right here is a brothel in your pocket. Get rid of it. I'm also going to take a really hard line here. And I'm not going to apologize for it. You can feel differently if you want to. I think you're wrong, but that's fine. You should only be friends with members of the opposite sex in a context where they are also friends with your spouse. I hope that you all are really good friends in this church. I want to be friends. We're really good friends. I want that. But only in the context where Melissa is a part of that. So I know I've made a lot of suggestions to your wives that you may be excited about, but I want to be very clear. Your wife's weakness in any of those areas is not an excuse for your sin. You understand, like, when I give these instructions about, like, being sexually receptive, like, really building towards, like, a better sex life, if that's not happening for you, it does not justify or excuse sin. You must have self-control. Contentment in Christ, contentment in your wife, and all that is her, including the frequency and quality of sexual intimacy with her. Let me talk about another form of abdication real quick before we move on. I'll mention it again, but it's this form of abdication is like giving up. You might be tempted to give up on sex. And I know, like, there's seasons of life, like the older you get, like, that's just going to become a reality, right? But I'm talking about, like, young men who ought to be sexually active, tempted to give up. If you feel like she's just not receptive, I would encourage you to track how much time you spend looking at a screen. You can pull up the digital well-being app in your phone right now. It'll tell you how much time you spend on Instagram, how much time you spend on whatever. And if that's more than 30 minutes a day, it might be a problem. It might be a factor in your sex life. If you're finding yourself with a low sex drive, so it's like not even considering your wife, if you find yourself with a low sex drive and that's discouraging to you, your Instagram algorithm is going to tell you that you might have low T and you need to buy a supplement. But the reality is, you just need to stop staring at your phone. You need to work out. You need to watch the carb intake. Stop eating Snickers or whatever it is. Like, you know, like, chill out. There's times for feasting. There's also time to take care of your body. Watch the alcohol intake. Watch your sleep cycle. If you're using porn, listen. Like, there's the increase in the inability of men to get an erection is not because, like, it's not like, I know, who's our health department lead, the guy with the weird voice? Kennedy? Yeah, RFK, he's going to come and be like, oh, it's because of the vaccines, right? It's not the vaccines, it's pornography. Like, using pornography is going to lower your testosterone. It's going to make sex in your marriage miserable. There are proven scientific links between porn use and the inability to have sex. You need to get rid of those things, and you need to be more present in the other forms of loving your wife. You need to be more affectionate. You need to provide her with companionship. You need to provide her with friendship. You need to lay all the other forms of love onto her, and usually the erotic love is going to follow. Most men today think like they're going to fix it all by getting deer antler, whatever, the supplement, testosterone booster. You just need to stop looking at porn. You need to watch how you use your time. You need to work hard. You need to watch your health. You need to sleep. And you need to love the heck out of your wife in every other way. And the erotic usually follows. Now, I understand that there are legitimate medical conditions and there are seasons of life. Stress often impacts that. But I promise you that for most men, it's not low T. It's sin. It's low responsibility. So if at some point you find it easier to give up on sex, I want you to know that you're missing out on a way to communicate love to your wife. And you're opening yourself up to dangerous influences. So, what is the weakness that wives are tempted towards? Usurpation, right. They should be. They're fine. They're not listening to me. So the temptation to be controlling or manipulative, using sex as a weapon or a tool for getting your way, withholding as a means of power or authority, demanding certain things before rewarding sex. That's all sin. Don't do that. That's a really good way to sour your relationship with your husband. You should help in setting the tone for intimacy. Now, what I'm not saying is that you can't serve your husband by preferring him and serving him in sex by taking some kind of active role. By all means, you should do that. What I'm saying is that your husband should lead in setting the tone and expectations. He must be considerate, and if he's not, you can push back. He must be self-controlled, and if he's not, you actually need to push him towards the church. And if he refuses to be pushed towards the church, you need to bring the church into it. But if your husband desires more sex, if he's trying to lead in setting a tone, you should not immediately shut that down. You ought to seriously consider what he's saying. And it actually ought to bring you joy that he wants you. He wants to be satisfied with you. He wants to pour out all four loves onto you. One of those loves is the erotic love. Don't automatically assume that he's just out of control. Don't like take up this modern being offended at your husband's sexuality. You should actually seek to find a lot of joy in your husband's desire for you. And that produces an incredible safeguard for you and your husband and your home. Now, it's really important in all this that we remember redemption. Okay? Because this is true for all of history, but I think it's especially true for today. You may be bringing a lot of baggage into your marriage. Like, so when we went to Louisville in seminary, there was a guy who, like, his parents were just really, really faithful. He had never seen porn. He had, like, he didn't know what lingerie was. I think they were going to have, like, a lingerie shower for the wife. And he was like, do I need to get some lingerie? He had no idea what it was, right? And that's just, like, that doesn't happen today. That's very unlikely that that's what is happening with someone coming into marriage. Most of the time, there's heavy pornography use. There's some experience with pornography, at least. And we're oftentimes, and other forms of sexual immorality are being brought into marriage. You may have caused a lot of damage in your marriage since you were married, through pornography or emotional affairs or even physical affairs. Maybe you think that you've ruined your marriage, or that at least you've ruined this part of your marriage through infidelity. But I want to read, I'm going to read a section of scripture. This is Hosea chapter 2. And if you're familiar with Hosea, it's really, I would encourage you to go read it all. It's a book of incredible redemption. Just amazing redemption. And this is after the people, Israel, this is after they've been called a whore. Right? That's the language the Bible is using. She's chased after other gods, idolatry. It's over and over called whoredom. In Hosea 2, verse 14, it says, "Therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. And there I will give her vineyards and make the valley of Achor a door of hope. And there she shall answer as in the days of her youth, as at the time when she came out of the land of Egypt. And in that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me my Baal." So he's like this idolatry, this Baal worship. "For I will remove the names of the Baals from your mouth, and they shall be referred by name no more. And I will make for them a covenant on that day with the beasts of the field and the birds of the heavens, with the creeping things of the ground. And I will abolish the bow, the sword, and war from the land. And I will make you lie down in safety. And I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in steadfast love and mercy. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. And in that day I will answer, declares the Lord. I will answer the heavens, they shall answer the earth, and the earth shall answer the grain, the wine, and the oil, and they shall answer Jezreel, and I will sow her for myself in the land, and I will have mercy on no mercy, and I will say to not my people, you are my people, and he shall say, you are my God." Now, this might, I hope that you're seeing the imagery that we've already talked about here. You're talking about this, we're taking into the forest, and there's going to be this covenant on that day with the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven and the creeping things of the ground. Yes. Remember, like, the creation story, this garden temple, there's all the animals and beasts that Adam has dominion over, and yet he doesn't, like, he's not finding companionship there, and he's given covenant instead with this one who's from himself. Like, this is garden imagery. He's talking about the purity of marriage. And all this is done not with a perfect bride, but with a bride who, for the first three chapters of Hosea, is called a whore. God is a God of redemption. He's a God of redemption. No matter what sin or brokenness you're bringing into marriage, God loves to redeem. He loves to make whole. What did we say the other night? The whole Bible is the story of a broken marriage redeemed. He loves redemption. He loves taking the most broken, the most sinful, and making it pure. That's true of you. You can find all kinds of healing and restoration in all of your marriage, even in the sexual realm of your marriage. Because God is a God of redemption. And ultimately, we need to remember that sex is finite. There's a limit on how much pleasure the human can handle. There will always be letdowns and failures and disappointments and regrets, and your sex life is going to taper off until you go back to the dust. But we need to remember that the consummation of Christ's kingdom is a sure thing that will bring no disappointment. There are greater joys and pleasures that are going to surpass sex, and this gives us freedom, gives us a lot of freedom to be content in our spouses here and now. We don't have to pursue something better. We don't have to pursue something outside of what the Lord has given us. We can be content in what He has given us. knowing that even when things aren't satisfying here, there will be a perfect consummation of Christ's kingdom. And so, we're going to wrap it up. I want to really briefly, I want you guys to talk about this. And if you will take out the things that I handed out, I want to help you. I want to talk about how you can talk about these things. Can I have your marriage assessment real quick? So this is a marriage assessment. I modified this from an ACBC resource. And it has categories where you can rate your marriage. Spiritual health, emotional and mental health, relational health and communication, physical intimacy is section 4. You guys should have conversations about this. Parenting and household leadership, seasons, struggles, and sanctification, and then some short answer stuff on the back. Now listen, it's very important. Don't fill this out and then hand it to your wife like or your spouse like it's a report card. This needs to be primarily you focused. Like, how am I doing? And then this needs to be worked through with lots of patience and love. And you're not like using this as a tool to attack your wife. Like, look at all the ways you're disappointing me. Or vice versa. So I keep saying wife because I'm a husband. So use this as a helpful tool for conversation. Men, this is a helpful tool to help you lead in setting the various tones and figuring out, like, how do I need to help? How do I need to support my wife? This is a really helpful tool. This, Melissa and I do this every year. We get away, we get rid of the kids, and we go off somewhere, and we spend time going through this, talking through. We'll work through like a section, and we'll sit down, and every 30 minutes we'll go through one section. We do it separately, and then we come back together, and we talk through it. What did you get? And I don't know, which one of us is more pessimistic? Like, I think I'm usually like really, oh, I suck. And we come together, she's like, you're not that bad. So we do it apart, we come together, we talk through a section, and then we'll just hang out and rest and reconnect, and we'll go do another section. I would really encourage you to find a time to do that. The church would love to help with that. Anyways, there's that. This is the pain chart. Not a pain chart. This is, as we've been talking about needs and design and then weaknesses, right? This is a breakdown of like a temptation diagnostic. So I'm really sorry this is so clinical. It's just, I don't know, my brain works this way. So I produced this because I had a hard time communicating with Melissa how I was doing. I've modified this from the one that Melissa and I use. This is more of a general one. But it'll address, like, how am I tempted? Like, how are those weaknesses creeping in? And the way that Melissa and I do it is we have a little whiteboard that's magnetic, and they're like up, and then we have these magnets that we slide across the board. And then there's one for the wife, and they're filled out, like the temptations are by design, like according to like how you were designed as man, woman, right? And then at the bottom, there's a needs diagnostic. What do I need, right? And I try to use really biblical language when talking about sin. I try to use biblical language when talking about what I need. Now, really important, I'm giving you this so that you can see one example of how I am attempting to communicate faithfully with my wife. One of the first things I said is that I want to push you towards faithfulness, not a formula. So don't go home, wives, and be like, why don't you give me a diagnostic chart? Don't do that. This is an example. If this doesn't work for your household, it doesn't work for your household. That's fine. What I want you to know, men, is that you have to lead in communicating. You should seek to know these things. How are your wife tempted? What does she need? Why is it really good that your husband is able to communicate how he's tempted? And what does he need? Okay? So you can use this if you want. You don't have to. Please don't feel like I'm handing this out as like a, here's an assignment. I'm just giving you an example of something that's really helpful in my own household. The other thing, a really simple way to stay in consistent communication with your wives, men, is by at night when you go to bed, we answer these questions before we pray for them, before we pray. And this doesn't take 5 minutes, okay? So what are you grateful for from today? That's knowing, like, what?
I said, I guess it depends on the answer.
Yeah, sometimes it takes more than 5 minutes. But you need to know, like, what your wife is finding joy and contentment in. Is there anything you need to confess or make right from the day? We talked about keeping your house decluttered. It's an excellent opportunity. Keep your house decluttered. Don't go to bed without dealing with something. Did I say or do anything that hurt you today? Do I need to repent of something? How did you see God's hand at work in our home or hearts today? And then what's one way I can serve or encourage you tomorrow? So again, I'm not handing this out as a formula. You have to go do this. This is what faithfulness is. I'm saying you need to find ways to be faithful in your home. You need to lead in how you communicate with your wife. You need to lead in understanding and knowing your wife. You need to, and these are ways that help me. This doesn't have to be the way you do it. I do hope that you'll take seriously leading in communication, leading in loving your wife. We're going to, oh man, I made really good time on that one, guys. We're going to take a 10-minute break. 10 minutes.
Wow.
And then we'll come back. So grab snacks and go to the bathroom, and we'll bring it back.